Russ, one of our audience comments, it says price premium does not necessarily mean profit. Are organic growers really making a profit? And are you aware of any studies on that specifically for fruit and vegetables?
Yeah, great question. Actually, I was involved with a study on the Four Corner States. It's called the Organic Market in the Four Corner States. It was a few years ago, looking at practices in 2005. But in that survey to all the certified organic producers, we asked the question, you know, whether they thought it was more profitable for them. Of course, 78% said they thought it was more profitable, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you could go out and it'd be more profitable for you. But at least the ones that are currently doing it, you know, felt that it was more profitable for them. And also in terms of, you know, why they actually grow organic, the number one reason that was selected was higher prices, and it wasn't, you know, the belief in the organic philosophy, but it was related to price, so, and market access. So I guess there's positive indicators, at least from those that were certified organic in the Four Corner States, that higher prices and the profitability was why they were doing it.
Given the, and either one of you can jump in on this question, given increasing efforts of Walmart and other marketers to offer locally grown foods, do you think this represents a new outlet, or is it simply increasing competition for niche marketers?
Well, I mean, I think it's a lot just like the organics. I mean, organics used to just primarily be in, you know, the natural food stores and whatnot. And now, I mean, I think that of the organics sold, about, I believe it's like 47% is sold through, you know, what we call traditional supermarkets, including Walmart, and, you know, another 45% or so to the specialty stores, you know, about the same. And then the rest, organics is sold, you know, to farmers markets, roadside stands and whatnot. So that, you know, clearly, I mean, whenever you find a niche, it's not like you can just stay there and sit on that niche, because as that niche tends to grow, others will recognize it and work to capitalize on it. You know, so, you know, just being local, you know, probably is not going to be enough in the future if you know, other supermarkets are really trying to source locally and provide that commodity or ingredient attribute as part of their food offering.
I might add a comment
to that.
I'll
ask this question first. Go ahead, Rod.
I can give an example of, I have a local dairy producer that put in a cheese processing facility, and their intent is to try to use some of their own milk and process it and increase profitability through those avenues. And as they, you know, they do have a lot of direct sales from a small store right on their dairy, and some smaller farmers markets and things like that. And now they're looking at to expand their sales through retail outlets such as the Kroger retail or grocery stores and others. And so I think there's twofold. It gives them an opportunity to probably increase the number of pounds of cheese that they're able to sell, but a lot of times the profitability on those are less because of the grocery store itself trying to attract some of the profits from those. So there's some benefits on moving more product, but probably at not as profitable of a rate as some of their other avenues, if that makes sense. So.
And Rod, and then I'd like both of you, Russ, to answer this from your own experience. In your experience, are niche markets more profitable than traditional commodity production? Russ kind of dealt with that before about the organic. But and the other thing is, given the uncertain and difficult economic times we find ourselves in, are these a good strategy to pursue?
Well, your question about are niche markets more profitable, there are niche markets that are more profitable, and there are niche markets that, or niche production activities that are fail as well. So it really depends on the situation. I would say it provides, there are opportunities for agriculture producers to look at different markets or different alternative enterprises, and determine and make sure you do the analysis or use a sharp pencil to before you actually get involved. But I think there are opportunities, but that doesn't mean that all niche markets are profitable. That's my answer to the question.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, I think
Russ,
the one thing that's probably not going to work is a small scale and a commodity oriented market. I mean, you're going to have to be subsidizing your income from something else, and some people do that as well. But you know, if they're in it for lifestyle or what have you, but I think the opportunities are definitely more there for the niche in terms, especially on the smaller scale. And you know, but that doesn't necessarily mean that necessarily a niche market is going to be profitable, as Rod is emphasizing.
Many small producers are looking at niche. The latest USDA ag census, I was surprised, and I may not have this figure exactly right, says that I think it was as high as 80% of the farms in America have off-farm income sources. And of course, these are much more critical probably with small producers or folks just entering. So what is some advice that you have to give to folks that are pretty dependent upon off-farm income, and how they in terms of alternative enterprises, or these, how they think about that off-farm income in relationship to their this business, ag business enterprise that they're either in or starting or changing?
Well, I might just refer to, I know like the Apple Annie's operation that I referred to, they, you know, off-farm income was really crucial for them when they were starting. John, he was working for the Forest Service at the time, and you know, as and allowing their business to grow early on, I think that was really, really critical for their enterprise. I mean, he doesn't work there anymore, but early on, in particular, the off-farm income was really crucial for their operation.
My comment to that, John, would be I've had a lot of experiences where the second income, which has normally come from off-farm, their desire is to have that second income come from these niche direct markets, so they can stay home, maybe be with the kids, or those kind of things. So their whole goal is to generate their second off-farm income on the farm, and so they can be home with kids during their raising their family. And so, but it's very difficult, I think, on the smaller operations, like Rush said, without off-farm income of some sort, it's very difficult to have the production and profitability to make it a viable business alone without some off-farm income.
And here's a question. The timing was such. And the question is, did they have a budget or any, and this is for Russ, did they have a budget or any economic analysis to substantiate their acceptability of making a profit, or is just a guesstimation? And I'm not sure if that was talking about Annie's Orchard or one of the other examples that you used, but I'll let you divine that, Russ. Let's say Annie's.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could say that.
Put the question to that one.
In just talking with them in general, they really do have a pretty good indicator of not just their total bottom line, but the different, what I might call, profit centers that are going on, like especially with Apple Annie's and even Eggers Orchard, in terms of, you know, their products and the markets they're going to. I know Apple Annie's, in terms of the adjustments they've made just even within their kitchen there, you know, they do really do a good job of tracking, you know, not just what's selling, but how much money they're making off of it in terms of the help and everything else. And also, you know, with the Briggs and Egers, I mean, they really seem to do have a good feel for their, as Rod would say, their break even and everything around related to the whole orchard and the marketing activities going on. And just to even emphasize, you know, even though 10% of direct sales is not a lot, Lance was really working and saying we need to grow that because, I mean, as Washington State really increased a lot of their organic production, just, you know, that local market there really helped our bottom line a lot, so.
A question just came in, and Russ, I believe it was you that pointed at some interesting Ag 2007 census. And this is a follow-up on that, I think, and it says, do you see any trend towards commodity growers dedicating some of their acreage towards growing for local or niche markets?
Well, I think that's what we're seeing. You know, as I guess the ag statistics verifies as well, I mean, it's still a relatively small percentage of total farm sales. So it's not like it's, you know, something that is necessarily going to be noticeable in terms of the overall size of farm sales much, but at the present, but I just do think we see a growing trend in that direction.
I know the go ahead.
I've had experience with a lot of commodity producers that are maybe not a niche market, but they're looking at alternative enterprises such as like a hunting or a fishing type of an enterprise where they're bringing in outside hunters on their property, which has significantly helped their bottom line and profitability. Some others that are have experience in training their own horses and stuff. They're actually bringing in outside horses and charging for that to train other people's horses and also training dogs for livestock, that kind of thing. And so there's a lot of it may not be what you would consider maybe the fruit and vegetable type niche markets or farmers market type stuff, but there's a lot of alternative enterprises that people are looking at that kind of diversify their operation and also give maybe some additional income here and there to help over time.
And generally, it's not a lot of acreage involved either. I mean, usually we're talking usually on the smaller side, on the acreage side, so.
I don't know whether we'd call it a trend or not, but here in Eastern Washington, a group of growers have banded together wheat producers about the most commodity of commodities in terms of for the greatest in an undifferentiated product. Growing a specific hard wheat with really excellent milling qualities and have marketed that under something called Shepherd's Grain. And economic difficulties have worked their way back into that market as well. But I mean, there was an opportunity in an area where most people don't think about as well. So I don't know whether we would call that a trend or not. So I'd like to thank Russ and Rod very much for their very informative presentations. I'm sure that if you want to communicate with them directly, they would both accept your emails and their information. You can get find that with either the University of Arizona or Colorado State University. As I pointed out, next Wednesday morning, again, 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, 12 Eastern. The wrap-up to our marketing series with Don Thilmany and Raleigh Curtis. Our October series is Families Facing Uncertainty in Agriculture. We've got an excellent group of presenters with lots of experience working with families in caught in financial distress. In November, operating in a risky environment where we'll focus in more specifically on risk management areas in all of the areas that we've touched here. And while we will deal some with crop insurance, managing risk, of course, is much greater than that. And then in December, we'll pull it all together in managing and ag enterprises. And I would, if you've missed some of the past presentations, the June ones on credit, the earlier ones on marketing this month, you can go to our Ag and Uncertain Times website. The recordings are there. The slide materials are there. List of speakers, contact information, and some discussion of webinar topics. We'd like you to provide us some input of other anything additional in the areas that came up today you'd like to see information provided on, or provided us some advice, comments. You can either do that on the chat pod at the left or send us an email at westrme@wsu.edu. We've been through the polling questions for the audience, and so this next pod that comes up, you can click on these files and follow the directions, highlight a file, click on the Save to My Computer there at the bottom, follow the instructions, and it'll download this virus-free file to your computer. It has all of these web references and sources on it, and from yesterday's presentation and also from today's presentation. And we'll leave that up a little here after we sign off on the webinar. But again, thank you all very much. Look forward to seeing you next Wednesday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific time. Thank you.